I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear an interview between Jack Etkin of the program Face to Face and Elizabeth Woodworth, co-founder and coordinator of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. The 9/11 Consensus Panel was started just this year by Elizabeth Woodworth and Dr. David Ray Griffin, the author of 10 books on 9/11, his latest being 9/11, 10 Years Later, When State Crimes Against Democracy Succeed. The panel has a website, which is consensus911.org. And on their website, they state, quote, "The purpose of the 9/11 Consensus Panel is to provide the world with a clear statement based on expert independent opinion of some of the evidence opposing the official narrative about 9/11. Some of the 22 members of that distinguished panel are Dr. Stephen Jones, former professor of physics at Brigham Young University, Commander Ralph Kolstad, a retired U.S. Navy fighter pilot, Lieutenant Colonel Shelton F. Lankford, retired from a 20-year career in the U.S. Marine Corps, Dr. Graham McQueen, Ph.D., lecturer in Buddhism and Peace Studies at McMaster University in Canada, Massimo Mazzucco, award-winning filmmaker, screenwriter, and journalist, Daniel Sunjata, American actor in film, television, and theater. He performed in a Tony Award-winning Broadway play called Take Me Out and also is featured in the TV series Rescue Me. Dr. Robert Bowman, former head of the Department of Aeronautical Engineering at the U.S. Air Force Institute of Technology and the director of Advanced Space Programs Development under Presidents Ford and Carter. David Chandler, a high school and junior college physics and math educator. Giulietto Chiesa, an Italian journalist, former member of the European Parliament, and the producer of the documentary film about 9/11 called Zero. Dwayne Dietz, a former director of research, engineering, and aerospace projects at NASA Dryden Flight Research Center. Lieutenant Colonel David Gapp, a U.S. Air Force retired pilot, former president of Aircraft Accident Board. Dr. Niels Herrett, Associate Professor of Chemistry at the Nanoscience Center, University of Copenhagen. He was the first author of the article, The Active Thermitic Material Observed in Dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center Catastrophe, which was published in 2009. And then there's Elizabeth Woodworth, who is in the interview today, and she is a retired health sciences librarian and author of What Can I Do? Citizen Strategies for Nuclear Disarmament. She has been researching 9/11 evidence, editing books, and writing articles on the topic since 2006. And again, as I said, she is the co-founder and coordinator of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. And so here's the interview between her and Jack Etkin.
Hello, and welcome to Face to Face. Today we're going to be talking about a very important subject, 9/11. Our guest is Elizabeth Woodworth, who is a co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. The other co-founder is Professor Emeritus Dr. David Ray Griffin, who taught theology and the philosophy of religion with a focus on the relation between religion and science for 35 years at Claremont College near Los Angeles. He has written 10 carefully researched and documented books containing verifiable knowledge about 9/11. This is a very serious subject, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoy what we're going to be talking about. So, Elizabeth, you are a co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. Why did you and Dr. Griffin create this panel?
Well, to start with, I have been working with Dr. Griffin for 5 years. I'm a medical librarian, and I've been doing bibliographic support and research support for his last 7 books. So we've gotten to have a pretty close working relationship. And we decided that we needed to find some way to get the mainstream media to look at 9/11 And we thought that if we created a panel, a scientific panel, that it would be more likely if the rules of how the panel worked were evident and its methodology were evident. So there have been 10 years of independent research showing that the official account of 9/11 is false. And this research has been peer-reviewed in reputable scientific journals. However, the media claims that it's not qualified to evaluate the evidence from these papers in view of the official evidence that's been given to the world. So we founded the Consensus Panel to provide well-documented, best evidence that the media can understand and trust.
And what do you mean by best evidence?
Well, we use the term in a very narrow sense. With regard to any specific claim of the 9/11 official story that we challenge, it is not evidence in support of alternative theories of what happened on 9/11. There are many of those out there, but we are looking to expose what is false about the official story and look at specific points of evidence and then generate the very best evidence against those specific points that the official story has claimed to be true.
To me, it sounds very interesting because I am certainly somebody who does not believe the official story of 9/11. So what is the objective of the Consensus Panel?
Well, the first thing is the importance of the whole 9/11 issue, which was the trigger issue for the wars of the last 10 years in the Middle East. And millions of people have died as a result, and it doesn't look as if it's going to change in the near future. So it is the major event of our century, and it's still dictating foreign policy. So we seek to present the best evidence against these official claims relating to a broad spectrum of 9/11 events that are opposed by an equally broad-spectrum panel of experts using an established consensus approach. And we offer this evidence in the form of consensus points, each one documented with strong references.
Okay, and we're going to be talking about some of these consensus points. Can you name a few?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, the first point, which I don't think a lot of people realize, is that Osama bin Laden there has never been any evidence brought forth against him. And on the FBI website, he's not wanted for 9/11. He's wanted for other things that happened in the past, but they never actually got to the point of being able to charge him.
This point about Osama bin Laden, you are saying that there is no hard evidence has ever been brought forward by the U.S. government, the FBI, the CIA, the Canadian government, or anyone else.
That's right.
That says that Osama bin Laden was behind the attacks.
That's right. They were going to. Originally, Colin Powell announced that he was going to bring forth evidence. And a couple of days later, he got up in the Rose Garden at the White House and said, no, we've changed. It's against the national security interest to point to anything specific. So they never did. They never actually came out with anything.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, does this not sound a little bit strange? That, I mean, we all know, in quotation marks, that Osama bin Laden was behind the 9/11 attack because we've been told that for the last 10 years by all the politicians and all the media. And yet, Elizabeth, you are saying that no hard evidence has ever been brought forth to link him to the attacks.
That's right. And in fact, the night before September the 11th, on the 10th, he was in a military hospital in Pakistan having kidney dialysis. And that was reported on CNN. So there are so many things, if you start looking into the depth of the story that you don't hear on the mainstream media, there are very strange anomalies about bin Laden, including his recent demise.
Yes, that was quite an interesting story in itself. Just to tie this back into the consensus panel, you are not making this statement of no hard evidence on your own. I mean, this is one of the points brought forward by, can we call it an expert panel?
Yes, it's an expert panel. It has 22 panelists on it and two moderators, myself and Dr. Griffin. And so these people are given draft points, like the Osama bin Laden point. They're given in draft form, and the people are all blind to one another. So they can't discuss the points. They have to respond individually, and we incorporate the feedback from these 22 people, and then we send out the revised points a second time. And they are faced with the revisions. They offer more feedback. They rate them each time on a scale from 1 to 6. And finally, after maybe three rounds, we have the points have been refined enough that everybody agrees with them, and then we've got consensus if it's 85%. It has to be 85% or higher. And I was speaking to an epidemiologist today who told me that 85 is very, very good for using. This is the Delphi technique, and it's very good to get that amount, that high level of percentage from that many people.
Now, I don't know anything about this consensus panel, but can you name either some of the people who are on it or their qualifications or areas of expertise?
Well, we started by, there are 12 professional associations in the 9/11 Truth Movement. And it's right across the board. There's scientists and
scientists for 9/11 Truth.
Scientists for 9/11 Truth, scholars for 9/11 Truth, firefighters, pilots, political leaders, religious leaders.
For 9/11 Truth.
Yes, they're all called for 9/11 Truth. And military officers. And so we sought to get one panel member from each of these professional associations. And we have 10 people from the associations. And then we have another 10 people who have written peer-reviewed studies in the scientific literature, published in the scientific literature, or books for mainstream publishers. And none of these things ever get reviewed.
No. So this sounds, at least, to be a fairly serious group of people.
They are very serious, yeah.
And,
yes.
And an expert group of people.
Yes.
And this expert group of people, ladies and gentlemen, is saying that no hard evidence has ever been brought against Osama bin Laden for the 9/11 attacks. So can we ask what's going on here? Maybe you can. So that was point number one, was Mr. bin Laden. And then you say there are four points about the Twin Towers that this organization is bringing forward.
That's right. They can all be seen on the website at consensus911.org. That leads into all the panel members and the honorary members and so on. But the first point about the Twin Towers is that jet fuel fires, like jet fuel is basically kerosene. It burns at about 1,000, at the highest would be 1,000 degrees Celsius. And the official story claims that the steel and iron columns were melted by this fuel, but it takes 1,500 degrees Celsius to melt steel, just like if you put kerosene in your fireplace grate, it wouldn't melt the steel. So the other thing is that huge sections of the perimeter steel columns, weighing many tons, were ejected horizontally as far as 600 feet. And you can see that on YouTube. You can see videos where you can see those ejections happening.
So once again, just to go over that, what you mentioned was very true. You can have a kerosene stove made out of metal,
yes.
And you can burn it at high a temperature as kerosene is going to burn at, and the stove does not weaken or melt. No. Nothing happens to the stove. So why did this entire steel building, the first one ever in history, to fall supposedly because of fire? And then you make the point that huge sections of the perimeter steel columns weighing many tons were ejected horizontally as far as 600 feet. That's twice the length of a football field, blown out, obviously. There's no explanation for this. So that's the first point on the Twin Towers. Does it raise any questions? Can I ask where our politicians are, where our media is, why we're fighting wars? You know, why we're now signing a border deal with the United States because of the threat, the terror threat brought about by 9/11. Point number two.
Yes, there were 500 members of the Fire Department of New York attending soon after the towers collapsed.
What happened?
It was an explosion. It was in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
What was it like?
Horrible.
It's like
horrible.
Hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
That was the planet, probably?
Yeah, definitely secondary explosion. Because we was inside waiting to go upstairs. And on the way upstairs, the whole thing blew. And we just collapsed on everybody inside the lobby.
Similar to the first tower coming down, secondary?
I don't know about the first one, but I know the second one, it was terrible. Then there was a third one, too, after that one.
Third explosion after that?
Yes, sir.
They came. They were actually there after the towers were hit and before they collapsed. And at the time of the collapses, 100 of these firefighters reported enormous explosions in the buildings and in the basements of the Twin Towers. A third point is that the towers were built to withstand airliners the same size and at the same speed that they were hit by on 9/11. One of the architects explained, for the Twin Towers, explained that They were created like a big mesh screen, like on your screen door, so that if it was penetrated at any point by an airplane, it would be like poking a pencil through the screen, and it would just destroy a little bit of the screen. It would not ever affect the integrity of the whole screen.
So just to reiterate again, an expert panel, and it sounds like you've even talked to the architects who built the buildings, say that the Twin Towers were built to withstand airliners with the speed and size of those that struck them. So
That's right. When
we hear the airplanes brought down the building, that can that be true? When we hear the fires brought down the building, but we know that fires don't melt steel, we hear the firemen saying, and this is well documented, 100 firemen saying that they heard explosions.
That's exactly right. And not only that, but the official story claimed that there were no explosives. They didn't look for explosives because there weren't any. It's kind of a circular argument. But a team of 9 researchers in 2009 published a peer-reviewed study that found nanothermite, uncombusted nanothermite, which is a very high-tech, usually military-grade explosive throughout the World Trade Center dust. And that study was published in a Bentham Science journal, which is indexed in all kinds of literary databases. It was never reviewed.
And this is amazing stuff. I mean, it's scary to think that this is going on and it's all kept completely hidden from us. So we've talked about Mr. Bin Laden. We've talked about the 4 points, about the Twin Towers, which I guess, as you said, these 4 points raise questions about and attack the official story, which can't be true if these things are true.
Exactly. And to go on, that's only 5 of our points. We have 3 points about Building 7, which most people have never heard about, World Trade Center Building 7, which was adjacent to the Twin Towers. It was a steel frame building with a base the size of a football field, same dimensions, 47 stories high. Bigger than anything I think we have in British Columbia. And that building fell in 6.5 seconds in a completely symmetrical, straight down fall. The roof remained level all the way down, and parts of that fall, the first part of that fall was at completely free fall speed. Same speed as if you dropped a cannonball off the top. It went straight down. It wasn't hit by anything. And the official story says that its 82 steel columns all failed simultaneously because of office fires.
Now, since we are dealing with serious issues here, the official story actually says that? Its 82 steel columns all failed simultaneously because of office fires?
That's right, because the building dropped right down. And these are enormous pillars. You know, they're stronger at the bottom, and they go up like that. And for the building to come down at free fall speed, just as if you dropped a paperclip off the top, they all have to fail simultaneously.
So this is the story we've been told, and because of this story, there have been several now wars fought.
I know.
Civil rights viciously attacked. A new single border being put around Canada and the United States because of this. The world has changed because of this, and yet the story, as you describe it here, seems absolutely ludicrous. Now, certainly the media must be reporting all of these very important points.
Well, unfortunately, it doesn't. It looks at them a little bit on the anniversaries of 9/11, and then it usually finds a way to write us off as, you know, they do an ad hominem thing on 9/11 researchers. All these 21 people, we've all experienced it. They go after us as kooks and tinfoil hats and so on. And yet we have 7 PhDs on the panel, and we have 3 lawyers and 4 journalists and quite a variety of well-educated people.
So, the hijack code.
Oh, pilots are trained, if there's a hijacking in progress, to punch 4 digits into a transponder. And the digits are 7500, 7500. It only takes a split second to do this. And it's called squawking, the universal hijack code. And of the 4 airliners, there were 8 pilots, and not one pilot squawked that code. And that's a very strange thing. So we've made that into a point, just because it sheds some doubt on the whole hijacking story.
It certainly does. So in other words, and you know, again, who hears about these things? We don't hear about it. Why don't we hear about it? So pilots are trained that all they have to do if there's a hijacking, you hit 7500.
That's right.
And the word goes out, and that did not happen on that day.
No.
The Flight 93 crash outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania, that's the 4th airplane that crashed into the ground.
That's right. There was supposed to have been, the official story claims that the plane came down at a very steep angle and it hit some very, very soft earth and that it completely buried itself in the soil. This is an enormous airliner. Well, the residents and the mayor and the journalists that came out that day, soon after the crash, they saw nothing to indicate that an airliner had crashed. Everybody thought they were in the wrong place. The contents of the plane that supposedly crashed there were found as far as 8 miles away. There were papers and things floating in Indian Lake, all kinds of rubble and so on. And there was a 1,000-pound engine piece found over a mile away, which would make the official story, if the plane went in nose first and buried itself, it's impossible that that engine could have been found so far away.
Now, I remember seeing this reported on television, on the internet, a couple of years ago. I was watching this exact thing where the local TV station had a helicopter out over the site, and they were interviewing somebody on the ground. And the guy on the ground, a policeman or official, I can't remember who, was just saying, "We don't see any evidence of an airplane here. This is the site, but we do not see any evidence of an airplane." And this was supposedly the flight where the passengers heroically...
That's right. This is the flight, the Let's Roll flight, the one where the passengers were trying to wrest control of the aircraft away from the hijackers.
And just to, again, repeat what you said, residents of the city, the mayor, and journalists near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, reported that no airliner was visible at the designated crash sites, So nobody could see the airliner.
And then they fenced it off. It became a security area, and people weren't allowed near it.
And remember, this is a serious group of people that is making these statements. The next point is Mr. Hani Hanjour.
Yes, Hani Hanjour had tried to learn to fly a small plane. All the hijackers, or a number, not all, but quite a few of them, had been training in U.S. private companies to learn to fly little planes. And he was so hopelessly incompetent that the instructors refused to go up with him. There are quite a few comments that we have written comments on file. Anyway, Hani Hanjour, the official story says that he flew Flight 77 in a downward spiral of 270 degrees and then along the ground and into at ground level without touching the Pentagon lawn and hit the Pentagon. And everybody is agreed that whatever happened that day with the Pentagon, it was certainly not under the control of Hani Hanjour.
And yet, officially, he is the official story designated pilot for that airplane.
That's right.
And that airplane also disappeared, did it not?
That's right. There was so little debris. Really, this is an area of real controversy in the 9/11 truth movement about what happened to that plane. We're not sure.
The next point is the man who many say was in charge of the whole event, and that was Dick Cheney. Mr. Bush was put in a grade 2 public school thousands of miles away.
Yes.
And Dick Cheney was in charge of the White House at the time, or he was there. So the question of his time of entry into the White House bunker from which everything is being controlled.
That's right. Cheney himself, or the official story, says that Cheney did not arrive in the White House bunker until after 10 o'clock, which was a long time after the Pentagon was hit at 9:37. A lot of Cheney's aides and Richard Clark, who wrote Against All Enemies, they all said that Cheney actually arrived in the bunker much earlier, and Norman Mineta, who is the Secretary of Transportation, said that Cheney arrived in the bunker between 9:15 and 9:20, and that while Mineta was watching, a young man would keep coming in to the control room and saying, "Mr. Vice President, there's a plane, it's 50 miles out. Do the orders still stand?" And Cheney would say, "Yes." "Come in, it's 30 miles out. Do the orders still stand?" "Yes." "Finally, it's 10 miles out." And Cheney said, "Of course the orders still stand. Have I said anything otherwise?"
During the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the Vice President, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is 30 miles out." And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the Vice President, "Do the orders still stand?" And the Vice President turned and whipped his neck around and said, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?" Well, at the time, I didn't know what all that meant. And
The flight you're referring to is the
flight that came into the Pentagon.
And the plane, something crashed into the Pentagon. So the time of Cheney's arrival in the bunker is very important because, you know, the official story said, well, he wasn't there. That couldn't have happened. But a lot of other people said that he was there and that, in effect, he may have been supervising a stand-down of Flight 77.
When you say a stand-down, you mean deliberate attempt or a deliberate move by the U.S. Air Force not to intercept any of the airplanes.
Basically. It looks that way.
So those are a number of points
yes.
that this expert panel uses to raise questions about everything that happened on 9/11. Certainly the most important day of this century to date. It did change the world. It caused wars. It would be a different and better world had 9/11 not happened. And yet these seem to be some very serious questions that say what we've been told could not possibly have happened.
That's right. That's what the panel is trying to do. It's not trying to create any theories about what happened. It's simply saying what did not happen.
So where do things go from here?
Well, we think that at some point something's going to happen in the media. It could be the Occupy movement. Things happen in strange ways, and if suddenly a major, like The Guardian did this past September, The Guardian was actually giving serious attention to some of the questions from the 9/11 truth movement.
And this is the British newspaper.
That's right, the Manchester Guardian. And if at some point the questions start publicly coming up and there's no way to stop them, the panel will be here to offer the best evidence that the media can trust, because we have followed a methodology that's used in medical science. And this is where I come in. I understand what best evidence is and what the Delphi method does and how it really guarantees that there's been objective stock-taking on any piece of evidence. So once the media starts looking, they can trust this evidence and they can know there's one place they can go and find quality scientific information. And they can also find it on Scientists for 9/11 Truth, and the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth have 1,649 architects and engineers now who are calling for a new investigation.
1,649 architects and engineers who say the buildings could not have collapsed the way the official story says.
That's right.
Elizabeth, we're almost out of time. What can people do, if anything?
Well, I think what they can do is go and look on YouTube and look at the way Building 7 fell down. That's the crack. That's the Achilles heel of the official story. And if that makes you wonder, that's how Dr. Herrett got started. Dr. Herrett's the man that led the nanothermite study. He saw that building fall, and he said his jaw just kept dropping lower and lower every time he looked at it because it was so impossible.
And after you watch that, then please, should they contact their media? Should they contact their politicians and try to put some pressure on the higher-ups to start doing something?
Yes, I think, and they could write letters to the editor, and they could just generally popularize the information that they believe is true.
So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. This has been one of our most important programs. Thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you for watching Face to Face.
And again, to learn more about the newly formed 9/11 Consensus Panel, their website is www.consensus911.org. There's so much going on in the world today, it's really hard to keep up with it all. A website I really like to follow what's going on in the Middle East and the financial realm is globalresearch.ca. I find it to be a really good source of information. And again, that's globalresearch.ca. And 9/11 Wake Up Call is archived on the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit for radioforall.net. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.